Welcome to Biology on the Beach. This is Dr. Leo Stouter. We're speaking today about DNA. Now, DNA is going to be the library within our cells that contains the code for future life. We call it a library because it contains lots of information. It contains all the information for our whole body. So everything that is created in our body has to be sort of dictated by DNA. So DNA is a library, so picture it as like a huge building with all sorts of recipes in it to create the different portions of us, and also to direct certain portions of our physiology, or those things that are actually in motion in us. So DNA contains the information for future cells of the body to function. So we're looking at DNA creating our bones, our teeth. DNA is creating our hair, our structure, our muscles. It's also creating those physiological aspects that will assist us, like in blood sugar levels, for instance, or in getting rid of waste through the colon and also through the kidneys. So these physiological functions are also going to be dictated by DNA. So DNA contains the information to be passed on to future generations as well. So our genetic code can then live on after us. So when we look at DNA creating body cells, we call this mitosis. So mitosis is going to be the process of creating body cells, or we call it somatic cells. Whereas if we're talking about sperm or egg, we're going to be looking at DNA creating this information through the process of mitosis. So meiosis is going to be the creation of the sex cells, and we can all agree with that, that indeed sex cells. And also that mitosis is going to be the body cells. So once you are already a fetus, and you've grown into be an infant, you then will grow further through the process of mitosis. But your initial coming into being was through the fusion of the sperm and the egg, and those cells came by the process of meiosis. So DNA is the shorthand for deoxyribonucleic acid. That's what DNA means. So when we look at the DNA molecule, we see that it's going to be DNA wrapped around histones, and these histones are going to be really protein. So they're a protein that is going to have the DNA wrapped around it. Now, the DNA is going to be created from nucleotides, so it's really a nucleic acid. So that's a different thing than a protein. But DNA creates protein. So what we have is the DNA, which is going to be in a configuration of a double helix. It's going to be wrapped around the histones. These histones then are going to wrap around each other in a way to make like a cord. In the old days, I would say it's like a phone cord, but now that we have cell phones, I don't think we really have phone cords anymore. But it looks sort of like the old-time phone cords that would go from the phone, the headset or the handset to the regular phone itself. So we can picture that being more coiled, and more coiled. As we coil it in, we call it chromatin. So chromatin is going to be the semi-uncoiled, if you will, DNA. Because DNA coils around the histones and then coils into chromatin. But if it coils all the way, then it will coil into a chromosome. So a chromosome is going to be concentrated, or shall we say, wound tightly, DNA, with the histones within it as well. So said another way, if we look at a chromosome, chromo means color, and some means body, so it's a colored body of DNA. The chromosome then would be a concentration of a DNA. And if we unwind the chromosome, we first get a first unwinding with just that fine wire, I guess we'd call it that cord again, the phone cord, then we get chromatin. If we allow the chromatin to be unwound even more, we start to separate it from its components, which will be histones, which is protein, and then also the naked DNA. And that naked DNA then will be the just the nucleotides. So that's said another way. But we get the idea that DNA is concentrated in the chromosome. Now, the structure for DNA is really important, and the structure for the search of DNA was really important. The reason was because if we know the structure of something, then we know the function, don't we? So you discover the structure, and you will know the function. So how does each cell in the body get the exact same DNA? And how does each cell produce proteins exactly? Because that's really the role of DNA, is to produce proteins. So how does each cell get the same exact DNA? Well, through that process we talked about, which was mitosis. So mitosis is going to divvy up, if you will, or deal out the proper DNA. And it will, through the process of the cell cycle, we will be reproducing the DNA through the S phase of the cell cycle, the synthesis phase. So in that synthesis phase, we reproduce our DNA. And then in mitosis, we shuffle out that DNA into two new cells. So that's how each cell in the body gets the exact same DNA. So if you were to take your skin cell off your body, it's possible for us to clone, if you will, a whole new person off that skin cell, because that one skin cell has all the DNA in it from your whole body. Because each cell started off as one cell. So we started off as one cell because the egg fused with the sperm. And because the egg fused with the sperm, it made one cell. That one cell had the 46 pairs of DNA. Out of that one cell, then, it went through the process of mitosis. One cell became two cells. Two cells became four cells. Four cells became eight cells. Eight cells became 16, and on and on. Through the process of mitosis. So because we start off with one cell, we of course then know that each of the cells coming from mitosis would have the exact same DNA within them. So how does each cell produce proteins exactly? Well, each cell is going to be directed, if you will, by DNA. So DNA has a sequence on it. That sequence is going to dictate what kind of proteins are going to be produced. The reason that our nose is where our nose is because DNA had directed the protein to be built there. If the DNA decides to direct a lot of protein there, then we got a big nose. If DNA decided not to, then we have a smaller nose. So that's basically the way it's going to be working. So the scientific discoveries are formed from effort of many, yet only a few get the credit. There are many individuals that will be involved in the process of discovering something amazing. But each of the predecessors to the great discovery are going to be not as praised as the individual that finally does discover whatever it is. So case in point, if we're looking at the discovery of DNA, we have a number of individuals that Watson and Crick basically stood on their shoulders. There's a number of individuals that they took from and they furthered, but nonetheless, if those individuals had not had the research, then Watson and Crick would not have discovered DNA. So all scientific discoveries are going to be based on something else. That's why it's so important for scientists to stay current in their field, because you never know what another scientist has discovered that will help that one individual discovers something even more significant. So Mendel started genetics, and then Griffiths followed. So really, the discovery of DNA starts off with Mendel, because Mendel discovered that there was a pattern to inheritance. And with a pattern to inheritance, that tells us that there's some logic to this. There's even some mathematics to this. There's some ground of practicality to this. So that means then that we can examine what that could be. What is the mechanism that allows this process of genetics to occur? Well, we think it's DNA, and we know that now. But the process to get to this realization that DNA was the fundamental of the hereditary, of heredity, then we have to think of, well, okay, the history of DNA then is going to be resting on Mendel first. Because this raises the question, why is inheritance this way? Then we get into Griffiths. Now, Griffiths had an experiment. And he had his experiment, but didn't answer all the questions. Avery followed. Then Charcot came up with his own theory. Hershey and Chase also came up with a theory. And then we get to the point where we realize what DNA is, but we don't know what it looks like. So Rosalind Franklin came along with her X-rays to actually try to get a picture of DNA. And finally, Watson and Crick, taking things from Rosalind Franklin's X-rays and also from their own intuition, they created a model of what they felt DNA was like. So that's really the overview of the history. So let's get into some details. The scientific question of the past, the scientific question of the recent past, what is the stuff of chromosomes? What are chromosomes? What are chromosomes? What is the components of chromosomes? What's their stuff? Well, we just described what they are. We said if we have a chromosome, then we unpack that chromosome or uncoil it, we said we're going to be getting DNA and protein. So we know now that that's the substance of DNA. But in those days, they weren't sure what was really carrying the genetics. They knew the substances. They knew the protein and DNA, but they didn't know which was going to carry the information. Why would that be? Well, we just discussed that DNA is going to create protein because on DNA there's a sequence. The sequence is going to dictate which amino acids, which portions of the protein, are going to follow which amino acids. So DNA directs the putting together, if you will, of different amino acids. And because this process is a sequence, we then look at protein and say, well, wait a minute, protein's also a sequence. Protein's a sequence of amino acids. So the thought of the recent past was maybe protein, given the fact that it is a sequence of amino acids, maybe that's the code, because a code has to be a sequence. Or maybe it is DNA. DNA has the nucleotides, and these are in sequence. So maybe DNA is the reason for genetics, or for the genetic information to be passed on. So this was a very poignant question of the day. So enter Griffiths, who took mice and injected them. Now, first of all, we have to define the term virulent. And virulent means that it's going to cause disease. So if something is virulent, it's going to cause disease, or it's going to be pathogenic. Pathogenic is the same as causing disease, but it's a broader term. Virulent is going to be more related to causing disease. You can get a disease and call it a pathology and say it's a pathogenic condition. But not all pathogenic conditions are results of disease. You can have a pathology in your bone for whatever reason. Maybe a fracture didn't heal properly. That would be a pathology, but that would not necessarily be due to a disease. In this case, what we're looking at is virulent bacteria. So anytime you hear virulent, you know it's going to be causing a disease. So what Griffiths did was he injected one mouse with virulent bacteria. Now we would expect if a mouse gets injected with a bacteria that could kill, that the mouse would die, and indeed that's what happened. So that was not that unexpected. Then what Griffiths did was he injected a second mouse, mouse number two, with a non-virulent bacteria, meaning it didn't cause disease, and nothing happened. So this would be what we would expect. So mouse number one died because he got injected with a virulent bacteria. Mouse number two lived because he was injected with a non-virulent bacteria. Now the interesting thing that happened, though, was that Griffiths took a third mouse, mouse number three, and he injected this mouse with heat-killed virulent bacteria. So that means he injected the mouse with the same stuff he injected number one with, but he took that virulent bacteria and he heated it so that it would no longer cause disease. Then he took the stuff he put in mouse number two, which was non-virulent bacteria, did not cause disease. He mixed those together. So he mixed the heat-killed virulent, so in other words, it's not going to cause disease, because it got heat-killed, and the living non-virulent. He mixed them together, injected them in the mouse, thinking that the mouse would not die. The mouse did die. So that was not expected. Now, why did mouse number three die? If you were to take heat-killed virulent bacteria and put it into a mouse, the mouse would not die, because the virulent bacteria had been killed by the heat. As we saw with mouse number two, a living non-virulent bacteria does not cause the mouse to die either. So why is it when you put a heat-killed virulent bacteria that should not cause disease, mix it with a living non-virulent bacteria, then you get disease? So there's got to be a reason for that. The reason is, obviously, there has to be something that happened to the living non-virulent bacteria. Somehow, the heat-killed virulent bacteria influenced the living non-virulent bacteria to become bad bacteria, to become virulent somehow. But no one knew why, necessarily, right now. But it was a curious thing, so there was a lot of head-scratching. Then enters Saint of Avery. Now, Oswald Avery continued with Griffith's experiment to see what killed mouse number three. He looked at everything in the solutions. You think of a bacteria having fat around it. It has genetic material called ribonucleic acid. It has carbohydrates around. It has proteins around it. So it has all these different things around it. It has DNA in it. So what was it that caused it to, or caused the heat-killed virulent bacteria to become virulent somehow, or to make the non-virulent virulent? So what was it? Well, Avery was very methodical. He destroyed all the lipids, all the fat in the structures. That didn't mitigate anything. That still killed the mouse. He took all of the ribonucleic acids, the genetic material, and that still killed the mouse. Took all the carbohydrates, all the proteins out of it, and that still killed mouse number three. So finally, he destroyed the DNA of the bacteria, and the mouse lived. So mouse number three, we used a number of number three mice, obviously. He used a number of them. But the point is, mouse number three was the one being injected with the non-virulent and the virulent bacteria, or the non-virulent bacteria and the heat-killed virulent bacteria. So what killed mouse number three, as Avery discovered, was DNA. So DNA was found to be the reason for the death of mouse number three. So what we can take away from this is that the reason that the heat-killed virulent bacteria influenced the non-virulent bacteria is because the DNA somehow got integrated into the non-virulent bacteria, and it changed that bacteria into being a virulent bacteria. So around the same time, we got Sharkov. Now, Sharkov came up with a rule. What he said was is that guanine, which is a component of DNA, equaled the number of cytosines. He also mentioned that adenine will equal the number of thymines. So these are four components of DNA. Now, Erwin Sharkov discovered these ratios. And this was important in the discovery of DNA structure, but it wasn't sure what this really meant. All he said was that G's equal C's, and A's equal T's. But what does that really mean, other than because they're equal, they probably go together, maybe. But that still doesn't give us the whole story. It's sort of like giving us part of the story, not the whole story. This may just be how the chapters are put together of a book. It really doesn't give us much of what the book's going to be containing. but it's still something that Watson and Crick really paid attention to in discovering the structure of DNA. Now, we already know from Avery's experiment that the stuff that causes genetics to go forward is DNA. But sometimes science needs more proof. So Avery was, looked at as, maybe we need more information. So Hershey and Chase came up with a fantastic experiment. They wanted to differentiate between DNA and protein as well. So instead of going the Avery route, which was to destroy everything else and whatever's left, it's got to be doing it, they decided to actually tag viruses that infect bacteria. These viruses are called bacteriophages. So bacteriophage will infect a bacteria. And what it does is it gets on the back of the bacteria, and it has a little stinger, sort of like a mosquito. But a mosquito sucks blood out, whereas this bacteria, or this virus, actually pushes its genetic material into the bacteria. So it makes the bacteria make more virus by injecting its genetic material into the bacteria. It's sort of similar to what the heat-killed virulent bacteria did to the non-virulent bacteria. Made it, virulent. So a virus called a bacteriophage will do this. Now, so what Alfred and Martha did was they proved that it was DNA that really goes from one generation to the next, sort of a reverse of Avery. Because Avery took out stuff, what they decided to do was see what was left after stuff. So Alfred and Martha used radioactive tags to track viral proteins and DNA. They tagged the virus that infected the bacteria, and the new virus is made from the infection. So they tagged the original virus that infected the bacteria, and then that bacteria would make more viruses. Then they analyzed the end result. So they tagged the virus, the initial virus. They tagged his protein, and they tagged his DNA with radioactive substances. So whatever comes through in the next generation of viruses, then, would be the genetic material. So let's say they tagged the original virus. Let's say they tagged his protein with a radioactive red. And then let's say that they tagged the bacteria or the DNA with a radioactive blue. So when we got an infection, we saw that there's no radioactive red coming through. There was only radioactive blue. So that meant that the DNA information was the way that the genes were getting from one bacteria or one virus to the other viruses. So this just proved that DNA comes through in the DNA rather than in the protein. So basically, Hershey and Chase confirmed what Avery said. So the scientific community was more into it after it got confirmation. So now enter in Franklin. Rosalind Franklin discovered the shape of DNA by taking pictures of it. Now these pictures are not the best, admittedly. I mean, you have to look at them sort of as if it were a spiral staircase. You look from the top down. Even Rosalind said that, she needed more time to get better and better photographs. And, the picture's worth 1,000 words kind of thing. But she didn't have the time because Watson and Crick pushed forward with their ideas on how to make a model off her photographs. So if you look at her photographs, you can see that there's a number of shapes that you see in the photographs, but it looks sort of like it's a round structure with like stairs coming out from the side, as if you're looking down at a spiral staircase, and you're looking at the stairs around. Now, if you're looking at down from a spiral staircase, it's possible that the staircase is one staircase. It's possible that the staircase is two staircases. It could be 3, 4, or 5 staircases. So is it a single helix, which would be 1 staircase? Is it a double helix, which is 2? Is it a triple helix? And on. Well, so that really wasn't answered. But as Watson and Crick went into the model aspect, and thinking about Sharkov's rule, where there's going to be a parity between C and G's and A and T's, they had to figure out all the components of the molecule and how it must fit together. So Watson and Crick then are credited with actually coming up with the structure of DNA. And for us, it's best to picture the DNA as a double helix. So it's going to be as if you took your arms and wrapped them around each other so that your hands sort of were like almost meeting. This would be what the DNA molecule would look like. It's two strands wound around each other. Now, if we look at it like a double helix, we can also then uncoil it and make it into a ladder. So the ladder will have its sides, will also have its steps or the rungs of the ladder. So the ladder then that we're looking at now is an uncoiled DNA structure. It's going to be uncoiled double helix. So if we look at the sides of the ladder, they're going to be created from phosphate and also from sugar. Now the rungs, or the steps of the ladder, are going to be made from two nucleotide bases. So remember we said that DNA is nucleotides put together? Well, what we're looking at here is nucleotide bases. And these bases are either going to be guanine, which is G, cytosine, which is C, adenine, which is A, or thymine, which is going to be T. So these are going to be our four nucleotide bases. But remember, each rung is only going to have two nucleotide bases. Now, these nucleotide bases are going to be what we would call complementary. So C always goes with G, A always goes with T. One of the rungs of the, or one of the sides of the ladder is going to be going up. The other side of the ladder is going to be going down. So we have a, when we look at the double helix, we see that the double helix is going to be going like a staircase up, and there's also going to be another staircase right next to it going down. So if we look at a representation of the DNA molecule, we'll see that there's going to be phosphates on the side, then there's going to be sugars, and then the rungs of the ladder, or the steps of the ladder, are going to be these two complementary bases. Now we notice that adenine has two bonding sites. Adenine and thymine have two bonding sites. Cytosine and guanine have three bonding sites. So it would make sense that C would go with G because they both have three bonding sites. And it would also make sense that A would go with T because they also have two bonding sites. So an easy way to remember which nucleotide goes with which is by remembering GCAT. So if you had a cat named G, G would go with C and A goes with T. So it's pretty simple to remember. So G goes with C and A goes with T because they combine, because they have their the same number of bonding sites. Now these bonding sites are going to be fairly weak bonding sites. These are called hydrogen bonds. Hydrogen bonds, as you remember from our previous study, are going to be very, very weaker bonds. So before we get cell division, remember we mentioned already about the S phase of the cell cycle. DNA replication has to take place because we're ultimately going to be having two cells at the very end of the cell cycle. So how are you going to get two cells that are going to be exactly the same as that first cell that went in the cell cycle? Well, the way this happens is through DNA copying itself. There's an enzyme called DNA polymerase. So we know what DNA stands for, deoxyribonucleic acid. Poly means many, mer means parts. And A's means it's an enzyme, or it's going to facilitate a reaction. So it's many parts of DNA are going to be put together using a template of the DNA molecule. What's a template? Well, if you look at a DNA molecule, you'll see that you have those, between guanine and cytosine, you have those three hydrogen bonds, which we said are fairly weak. We can break those bonds and separate the G and the C. So now if we separate the G and the C, we have two templates. Now, with our C template, we can add a G to that. Now we can make another DNA molecule. With our G template, we can add a C to that, make another DNA molecule. So what we've done is we've reproduced the DNA molecule by splitting it in half. We split it in half and then add the components that are missing, then we get our whole DNA molecule. So that's really how DNA polymerase uses a template of DNA, adds the bases that match the ones in the template. So when G is seen in the template, this enzyme will put a what next to it? And the answer, of course, is a C. If it saw an A on the template, this enzyme would put a what next to it? And that, of course, would be a T. So the enzyme DNA polymerase joins nucleotides during DNA replication. An accurate copy of the original DNA molecule is formed during replication using a template. Once you know the what, you know the what. Once you know the structure, you know the function. So DNA is a double helix with complementary bases of C and G and A and T. Weak hydrogen bonds hold the two bases together. By breaking these bonds, DNA can produce itself by creating two templates, as we just described. These templates produce two complete DNA strands. So that's how we can recreate our DNA, or reproduce, shall we say, the DNA. Notice that G goes with C and A always goes with T, according to our memory aid GCAT. So that's it for our discussion of DNA, and we'll talk to you again on another Biology on the Beach. This is Dr. Leo Stauder. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Hope that helped. Bye now.